Our final case for argument this morning is United States against Ellis.
May it please the court.
Mr. Bourgeois.
The issues with respect to the aggravators are whether the church was a secondary victim, and the other issue is whether it was established that there was criminal intent on the part of the bishop. I think the stipulations are the governing factors here. In the stipulations, the government agreed with the defendant that on multiple occasions the bishop was offered raises which were, in effect, about the same amount of money that was taken once a week from the church proceeds. The bishop had, in the course of his tenure, increased the membership of this church from a few hundred to 2,000. The amount of money that was being brought in had been increased from $350,000 a year to over $2 million a year. Bishop was being paid about $72,000 a year, and the board wanted to give him a raise. He didn't want to pay taxes on that raise, and he told them, give me the money in cash, and in fact took the cash once a week.
It never impresses me as a defense that I didn't violate the criminal statute they charged me with violating. I committed a different crime.
Well, the fact of the matter is that this is tax evasion pure and simple. I mean, if a man were working in a owned a grocery store and began taking money out of the till once a week so that he didn't have to pay taxes is no different from this case. But to put another crime on top of what he did, I think, is error. This simply does not constitute theft or embezzlement under the Illinois statute for the simple reason that there was no criminal intent. The bishop never intended to steal money from his own church. He's a 24/7
pastor. Did it make any difference to the sentence?
Sorry?
Did it make any difference to the sentence?
It did, because two aggravators were added, the abuse of trust and the fact that the other aggravator was the 2T aggravator, which provides that there's an increase in the event that the money was taken as a result of a crime. And here the situation is very simple. There was no crime other than tax evasion. And to say that there was a theft or there was an embezzlement when there was none, I think, and that makes these two aggravators go up.
Mr. Pierce, how did this matter come to the attention of the government?
One of the persons who was the accountant at the church went to the IRS and told the IRS that the bishop was taking this extra $1,000 a week. He was supplementing his salary, the salary that the church wanted to give him, by taking it in cash rather than through the payroll system. That's how it came to the attention of the government. Now, so was the church a secondary victim? Obviously, I don't think the church was. The church was very satisfied with what he was doing. There was never any complaint with respect to it. Theft is not established simply...
One reason why I ask whether it makes any difference to the sentence is that in the world after Booker, where district judges are not bound to follow the guidelines slavishly, they can respond more to real offense behavior.
Well,
right? Judge sentence here, if it were a slavish adherence to two levels up or two levels down, would be reversible on that basis. It looks like the district judge is trying to impose a sentence based on total real offense behavior and not being a slave.
So but what? The guidelines...
Why does this make any difference? The district judge knows all of these things. The district judge knows that there were some members of the Board of Trustees who favored this and at least one who opposed it. I mean, none of this was a secret from the judge.
What the court did, though, was to establish what the guidelines were based on these two aggravators, neither one of which should have applied. And with respect to the reasonableness of the sentence, the court took a categorical approach with respect to tax evasion. And in his colloquy, he spoke very ardently about how grievous this crime was because it was tax evasion. And therefore, if you look at this in the light of Cunningham, in the light of the decision that this court made in Cunningham, that the reasonableness of the sentence must be looked at and examined very carefully. If this tax evader had been treated like any ordinary tax evader, we would not have had a disregard of all these other considerations. The fact that this man has a substantial record of good deeds for his entire life, that he works 24/7 for the church, intimately involved in it. Thousands of people have had their lives affected for the better because of what he does. All of these factors should have factored into it. Years ago when I was in Sweden looking at the criminal justice system there, they don't have the Fifth Amendment, and they spend months looking at dissecting the offense and everything else. And if you dissect this and look at this man very carefully, as you did in Cunningham, you will see that this is not a reasonable sentence, that the presumption that the sentence within the guidelines is reasonable has in effect been rebutted here. But the judge was intent upon punishment because of the egregious nature of the crime.
The judge's principal concern, as I understand it, was that Ellis had put one over on the congregation.
That's right.
They didn't know what was becoming of their money, even if some members of the board did. And that seems independent of any technical arguments under the guidelines.
There is a stipulation that the court has got to pay attention to. The stipulation says that on numerous occasions the church offered him raises that would have been consistent with the amount of money that he did in fact receive. There's no question about that. This decision goes against the facts. There was no abuse of trust because the church did not feel it was abused, did not say that you cannot take this money, and the board knew about it. Pure and simple, I think that there was error with respect to that. And looking at it in the light of Cunningham, I think that these aggravators should not be assessed, nor do I think that the sentence was reasonable under the circumstances.
How would that affect his sentence if those aggravators should not have been considered or were not considered? How would that affect his sentence?
Thank you.
No, it was length of time. How would it affect his sentence if you didn't consider those aggravators?
How would that affect the sentence? Mm-hmm. It would have reduced the sentence to 8 to 14 months, the guidelines. And he was intent upon sentencing within the guidelines. He then would have sentenced within those guidelines instead of the other guidelines.
And the sentence he received was how many months?
Was within the guidelines, and the exact number was
18.
Yes, months. 18 months. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Kubiatowski.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor.
Raise the podium.
I'm sorry.
We'll want to raise the podium. There's a switch on the right hand side.
This is on the right side?
No, inside.
This red button? I want to make sure that wasn't a.
Yes, that will release the tear gas.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I've never had to raise the podium here.
Right. That's it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Steve Kubiatowski representing the United States. Your Honor, there's no question that the church here was a victim. The court so found. And as Your Honor, Judge Eastbrook pointed out, the district court clearly found that it was the church, not the board, it was the church that didn't know what was going on for purposes of both the abuse of position of trust and for purposes of the more than $10,000 from a source of criminal activity. The court went as far as to say not only did the congregation not know about it, the court also thought that it was quite possible that the board itself were co-conspirators in this tax evasion scheme. The church the church lost, by the government's estimation, $520,000 in income between 1996 and 2001. The district court did not agree with the government's assessment regarding the use of a Mercedes-Benz automobile, but if you throw that figure out, it's about $80,000. You still have a loss of income to the church of over $400,000. Now, the stipulation that defense counsel is referring to about the offer of a salary increase of $1,000 a week, that only explains a portion of the puzzle, the portion of the $1,000 coming from the weekly collections. But there were many more other pieces to that puzzle. There was the life insurance of approximately $9,000 per year, personal life insurance that was paid for by church funds. There was credit cards, personal Visa credit cards, Amex bills that were used for personal expenditures by the church funds. Clearly, those amounts alone, if you took the credit cards and the personal life insurance, would take you over the $10,000 limit for purposes of the 2T1.1B1 enhancement. The Begovin case that's been cited by the defense, this is indistinguishable from the present case. The court there rejected the argument, the Seventh Circuit rejected the argument that there's only one victim in a tax evasion scheme, that in a tax evasion scheme you can definitely have a secondary victim like the church here for purposes of abuse of position of trust. This court specifically said that and rejected the same arguments that are presented by the defense now. Unless there are any further questions, we'll yield
to Mr. Kubiatowski, would you answer this question that I asked Mr. Bourgeois about the if the aggravators were not there, what the range would be?
Your Honor, the offense level as far as the loss, based on the district court's finding, is 14. And for each of the aggravators, two levels in addition. So that would take it up to an 18. You subtract 3 for acceptance of responsibility, you're down to 15. That's the guidelines range that was found by the district court. And the guidelines range with an offense level of 15, no criminal history, was 18 to 24 months. Now, if you remove those two aggravators, you remove 4 points. That would take you down to a 14 for the tax loss of approximately $101,000. If you remove the if you count for acceptance of responsibility, which in this case would only be 2 points, you're down to a 12, and I believe that does place the defendant in a zone C type of sentence, looking at approximately 8 to 14 months, I believe, as Mr. Bourgeois stated.
Thank you.
Unless there are any further questions, I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bourgeois, anything further?
Just one point.
We'll get the podium down again for you.
Yes.
At the time that Fish was indicted, there was another matter in which a Catholic priest was indicted, Father Lepore. And Father Lepore had been taking the proceeds of the spaghetti dinners and he used it for personal purposes, putting new things in his house and that sort of thing. Now, the case came before a different judge, and the same charge, abuse of trust, was made in that situation. In that case, there was no assessment for the abuse of trust, and he received a probationary-type sentence. His church was a mainstream church. The bishop came from a Pentecostal church. In a Pentecostal church, there's a world of difference between the types of things that pastors do and can do. In a Pentecostal church, the pastor is given by his parishioners everything that he could possibly ask for and even more. I think that you have to look at this also in terms of that difference when you make your considerations. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.